And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 795. Picking up where we left off last episode, talking prospects for your upcoming draft champions drafts. And maybe if you're in a dynasty league and someone's sitting out there, or later in the year when a fab situation comes up, these players might be available for you for fantasy baseball. We're heading to the American League this time around. We have a friend of the show, a friend of mine, that has joined us multiple times throughout the rendition of this type of show, let alone Benched with Bubba. You got his work over on the Toolshed podcast. He's got his Patreon. He's got Roto Baller, and he's a big deal around here, especially in the prospect world. My good friend, the one and only Eric Cross. How you doing, man?
I am doing great, man. How you doing?
I am doing well, doing very well. It's a Wednesday evening. We're talking fantasy baseball. The hot stove is slowly heating up, so things are good. Things are good.
Yeah, it's starting to get a little spark. You know, we've had a few moves. You know, so early December, not too bad.
Not too bad. You got the winter meetings coming up, so I feel like there's gonna be some rather large stockings for Christmas for some people come pretty soon. So we'll see how that plays out. Before we get going, though, I gave like the brief synopsis. Remind everybody where they can find you, all your work, because you're literally pumping out so much stuff. It's awesome / crazy.
I just love it. There's no, especially with dynasty and prospect stuff being part of my repertoire. There's really no off season, so I can keep pumping out that content and October, November, you covered it, pretty much everything. Eric Cross MLB on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it these days. Roto Baller, my Patreon, which is linked in my Twitter / X bio. And yeah, still doing the Toolshed podcast weekly right now, and then be back up to probably two times a week once I start my dynasty and prospect ranking series in a couple of weeks. So yeah, just pumping out that content.
Beautiful. Yeah, for some reason, you guys aren't following Eric, which I'm pretty sure you are if you're listening to this show. Go support the guy. He's pretty darn good in the contact space, the prospect space, and just a good guy in general. So go check it all out. Let's get to it. As if anybody listened to the National League show or listened to this in years past, we go team by team in the American League, and Eric gives us the players that look like they'll be having an impact, or at least a chance to have an impact at some point in this 2026 season. So we'll start in the AL East. We'll start with your good buddies in the Bronx, the New York Yankees. They actually have some youth sitting around there. So when you look at the Yankees, Eric, what could we potentially expect for base fantasy baseball this year?
So the big one with the Yankees right now, and no pun intended, because this guy is a rather sizable human being, is Spencer Jones, who got up to AAA last year. He's one where, he could go off and have a Nick Kurtz-type rookie year, or he could just fall flat on his face. I know you can kind of say that about at least the second part of that, about any prospect, but the risk-reward range for Spencer Jones is more sizable than probably 99.9% of baseball players. You see there's massive power. He's a good athlete, too, for being such a big dude. He's 6'7", 6'8". Kind of built like a linebacker, but he's a good athlete, can steal some bags too. So like the upside for fantasy, like it's hard not to get excited about it. Look at last year, he had 35 bombs, 29 steals in just 116 games. But then you get to the massive strikeout rate around 35%. Contact rate is, in the low 60% range, even dipping into the upper 50s at times. So you got to wonder, does he even make enough contact to actually maximize all of his all the good in the profile? That's the big question right now. So we've seen the good and the bad with him so far, and who knows, with the Yankees, when their young guys will get a chance. There's not always an opening with the Yankees, or at least not right away. So while he might be knocking on the door and spent most of last year in AAA, I don't know if he's a debut in April or till July. It's kind of hard to say with the Yankees, but when he does, he's probably a guy that'll, have pretty sizable fab bids, especially if he's kind of putting up the big sexy numbers in AAA again. But as terms of what you're going to get from him when he does get up, it's so hard to say with this guy, just given all those pros and cons I mentioned.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I remember there was a point last year everyone was like, call him up, especially when Stanton was injured and they had some openings there. But now Grisham comes back and Stanton's, as of December 3rd, last I checked, healthy. That could change any moment. And they say they want to get the Martian Dominguez playing time regularly. So, yeah, there's no room at the end yet. There will be at some point. But to your point of when does he come up, when does he get a chance, that's the million-dollar question. But I am intrigued, just because of the hype train we saw last year. And to your point, if he breaks it off early in AAA, then good God, the ringing of people wanting him called up and how much he'll cost will be pretty electric. Anybody else in the Bronx that comes to mind for you? Is that all we got this year?
No, there's a couple arms that I like, kind of as like a late, last, 10 to 15 rounds, of a 50-round DC format. You're talking like rounds 35 on. The main one, there's a few, but the one I'm most excited about is Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who actually came from my Red Sox via trade a couple years ago. Had a chance to see him last year when he was still in AA. The stuff is really good. It's like wiffle ball stuff. The ball just moves. Fastball runs. He's got the sweeper. He's got change up. He's got the curveball. Everything is just big, big movement from this guy. But, one of the issues at times has been kind of harnessing it and, throwing strikes and just limiting the free passes. But, he's a guy if, the opportunity arises, which, as we all know, pitchers get hurt all the time. Even the most reliable of arms get hurt. So you got to imagine at some point there will be an opening in that Yankees rotation. Not sure when that's going to be, but I do imagine that you're going to see Rodriguez Cruz up for, at least, double-digit starts this year, maybe even more like 15, 18 starts. We'll see, but plenty of upside there. Also might get to see a guy like Carlos LaGrange, who has a lot of upside as well, maybe even a little Ben Hess. But, Rodriguez Cruz is the one that I'm really excited about potentially seeing up in the majors later this season. So like I said, I saw him, and it was just really, really impressive. I'm like, God, if this guy can kind of like harness everything, he could be a pretty fun arm for fantasy. So, yeah, he's one just to keep an eye on and maybe take a flyer on your last 10, 15 rounds of your DCs.
That's great to hear because it feels like those are the ones that I really love getting out of these shows, are those pitchers that not going to start with the team, but they could come up, get you 10, 15, maybe run for 20 starts, who knows. Those are the ones you get late in the DC that can go a long, long ways for your drafts and definitely put extra stars next to them when I take my notes. Let's head to Boston, to your boys, the Boston Red Sox, a team that, again, first glance, not a ton of room at the end right now. They have a lot of youth up, but we've seen them, and some are still considered prospects, which is fine. But what are we looking at here with the Boston Red Sox? Because we saw a lot of them last year, and I'm guessing we're going to run with them again this year.
Yeah, no, there's still a lot of young talent in Boston, even with all the guys they graduated last year. And obviously, Roman Anthony graduated, Marcelo Meyer graduated, Christian Campbell, though he still kind of feels like a prospect just because he got sent back down. But the two kind of the biggest two names here are, Peyton Tolley and Connolly Early. Obviously, we saw both of these guys down the stretch for Boston. Tolley had that really good debut against Paul Skeens, which is, tough to go against, arguably the best pitcher or top two pitcher in baseball in your debut, but he did so admirably. After that, next few starts didn't go quite his way, but still showed all the upside. Lefty can throw upper 90s, can rack up the strikeouts with the best of them. And then Connolly Early, that really good start. Actually had four pretty good starts with the Red Sox in the regular season. Then he had that nice start against the Yankees in the wild card round. So he kind of put his name on the map, not as, quite as highly regarded of a prospect as Peyton Tolley, but, I think he might be, as of now, ahead of Tolley on the kind of the pecking order for the last couple of rotation spots. As of now on December 3rd, it's going to be Crochet, Sonny Gray, and Bayo. But then after that, I think those four or five are open. Does Boston go out and get another arm? They're definitely rumored to be in on some of the other big names via trade. So we'll see how that shakes out. But yeah, Early and Tolley are both really intriguing arms. And but you're going to have to pay up, especially for Early, because his ADP right now is Yeah, 183. So, yeah, you got top 200 pick there. So that you're talking like what rounds was that 12, 13 or so in a 15 teamer. Totally a little bit less expensive. He's just after 300. But still, it's not like you're getting these guys in, you know, the last half of your drafts. You're getting them top 12 to 20 round pick here. But yeah, I like both of them a lot. I saw them both in double A. I do like Toley a little bit more, but early definitely impressed me, and he got better throughout the year. So yeah, both those guys are really exciting. And then on the hitting side, Yostinson Garcia, aka the password, you know, he's fun. He's a, you know, he's a top 50 overall prospect for me, and I think at least top 100 on a lot of other publications. But obviously, that Boston outfield is already, you know, jam packed. Even if they trade a Jaren Duran, it's still pretty loaded. So he's one where he'd have some intrigue when he does get up. I'm just not sure when that's going to be. But, you know, his ADP kind of reflects that. It's near 700. You're talking like super late round flyer. But, hey, given the upside he's shown, you know, a little bit of a nice little power-speed blend, you can do worse with like a round 46 pick in a DC. So, yeah, he's a fun one for later on.
Yeah, he feels like that's one of those guys. He's going to get like a 2 to 4 week stint somewhere. And if he catches fire, that's going to be glorious. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I will ask you about him because you mentioned him, and I'm with you. He's not a prospect, but he feels like one. What's your take on Christian Campbell? Like, what do you think they're going to do with him this year? Because like when we talked last year, he was the big thing. He made the team out of camp. Kind of started out good, then he struggled a bit. I know he was banged up a little, plus probably just first-year jitters, I would imagine. Who knows? But his ADP is 365 right now. And I know technically every position is full at the moment, but that obviously changes. What are your thoughts on Campbell? Because I think it's too early to give up on the kid, obviously. But is he worth taking at that kind of price tag, too?
Yeah, no, it's definitely way too early to give up on Campbell. And I'm still very much a believer in, you know, what we saw from him in his big breakout season in the minor leagues in 2024. And then he started off hot. He had a pretty good April. I think he was hitting like around 300 at the end of April. But then he had that rib issue like on the 2nd of May or whatever it was. And you could tell he just wasn't the same after that. He lost a little bit of weight, just wasn't making as much contact or impact, I should say, as he was in April. And they kind of mentioned that their goal this offseason was to get him back to where he was physically kind of, you know, back in 2024. Yeah, so I still like Campbell a good bit. I just don't know. He's kind of like the wild card right now. Like, where does he fit? Because I don't know if they like him at second base, which is where he came up as. They've talked about maybe wanting him to play outfield, which he did play a little bit of outfield in AAA later in the season. You know, they even thought about him at first base, which was kind of crazy. But, you know, the second base as of now is another spot that's kind of in flux for Boston. You know, we'll see if they bring somebody in. Meyer could play over there as well. So I think there's still a chance he could be the opening day second baseman, but I think it's far less certain than it was this time last year. But yeah, I still like him. Will I get him at that ADP? Probably not, just because I'm just so unsure about that playing time situation. I could easily see them like just giving him 2 months in Worcester, AAA, start the season to kind of, you know, get his momentum back. But I like him long term. But yeah, I probably won't have many shares unless he falls more on like the 425, 450 range. Yeah. That might be fine there.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you. But hopefully when we talk Red Sox in a month or two, we'll have better information on Christian Campbell. Baltimore Orioles, another team that for years loaded in the prospect world. We've seen a ton of them. Some have gotten traded. There might be more getting traded soon, but there's still a lot of youth when it comes to the Baltimore Orioles. Where are they at entering this year when it comes to the prospect realm?
Yeah, no, they still have a pretty good prospect core here. And, you know, it may not be as elite as it was, but they're still like a top 10, top 5, maybe even top 5 in terms of prospect talent, especially on, you know, for this year, there's a couple hitters that I'm pretty excited about. You know, Sammy Basayo is the big one. Obviously, you know, those of you listening that play on NFBC in the two catcher format, you know, he's going to be a guy that's probably taken as, you know, maybe a back-end C1 or a high-end C2. I think he's kind of like right on that threshold. I don't know if I would like him as my C1 just because I still have some questions about, you know, the contact skills kind of weren't the greatest at times last year. So, well, the power's there, and I could easily see him hitting 20-plus dingers this year. I do wonder if he's hitting like 230 or something like that. And then, you know, he's a great talent, but I'm not sure I'll have a lot of Bisaccia shares. But the one I will have a lot of shares of, and I've already seen the ADP start creeping up a little bit, maybe it's because I've been talking about this guy so damn much, is Dylan Beavers. Yeah. I love Dylan Beavers. And right now, out of all the kind of like prospect rookie ADP, he might be my favorite value because I think long term, this guy could be even better than a Bisaccia. And that might be, you know, people poo poo that because Bisaccia is the really big, sexy name and Beavers isn't. But Beavers, he makes contact above average clip. He has a phenomenal approach. He's a high walk rate. He's a big OBP guy. He's a, you know, above average runner. At, you know, around average power, but he hits the ball at good angles. So he's a guy that could still hit probably like around, you know, upper teens, maybe even low 20s home runs in years, you know, 20, 25 steals, hit you 260, 270, give you a good OBP. It's like that nice, well-rounded profile. You know, obviously Baltimore just brought in Taylor Ward, but at the same time, I feel like their moves aren't done. I feel like they're going to make another move here or two here to get some pitching. And even if they don't, I mean, the Baltimore outfield isn't exactly the epitome of, you know, durability. You know, you got like Tyler O'Neill hanging out there, Colton Cowser, those guys just can't stay healthy. So even if they don't get rid of, you know, one of those guys via trade, I still think Beavers is at least in the strong side of platoon. And if he's in a full-time role, I think he's going to be a phenomenal value. I think he could make a run at 2020 in his rookie year. And if you're getting that, you know, pretty much near pick 300, right around 270 right now, I am all for that. It's like you're, what, you're outfield four or five at that point in your draft. I think that's great value.
Yeah, I'm with you. When I first started drafting, because I have issues like in October, I was still like kind of like, okay, what are they going to do? There's a lot of moving parts in the outfield still. Like, I know O'Neill's going to get hurt. That's obvious. That will happen.
Yeah.
And then they go and trade for Taylor Ward, and that kind of took me off Beavers for a minute. But then it's just kind of like, it's the old adage, like HQ's adage and everything, is draft skills over role. Like, he's going to, like, they ran with him so much last year when Cowser came back and O'Neill came back. That should have been my sign. But so I'm with you. Like, his contact skills are pretty ridiculous. Let's head to the bump. There are a couple names that I've heard whispered around everywhere, especially after they keep trading pieces here and there. When G-Rod left, I've heard a couple different names that could be getting some usage this year. What do you like in Baltimore?
Yeah, first of all, wasn't that like the weirdest move that you've seen in a bit? Like, that just made no sense.
It's the Angels doing Angels things, but I guess it's staying cheap, and like they assign Manoa too. It's like, let's get cheap guys and see if they can figure it out. Like, right. That's pretty much what it feels like with them, which, okay, that's their style. Maybe they'll find it one of these days, but I love Taylor Ward, and I thought he deserves better than that, but fair enough.
I know. I do like, Taylor Ward's pretty underrated. I do agree with you there. They have a few guys that are all kind of, you know, on the cusp here that should debut at some point this year. That'd be Michael Ferret, Jaron Watts Brown, who I saw last year in Double A. He was electric. He was really fun. And then Trey Gibson as well. Gibson's probably the one that you see up first and probably get the most run this year. I mean, his ADP is right around pick 600. And I'm not even sure the other two. Looks like Michael Ferret's been drafted in one draft and Watts Brown in none. But yeah, Gibson's the guy that, you know, he feels a little underrated, and I was even guilty of that in my own rankings because, you know, he's a little older for a prospect. I think he's like, what, almost 24 now, if I recall correctly. But he's a guy that had a really kind of sneaky good year that didn't get talked about enough because of all the other, you know, big young names in that Baltimore system that were just getting more and more publicity. But, you know, he ended the year, you know, the overall numbers don't look that great because the end of the year getting blown up a few times in AAA, but he had a 10 start stretch in Double A where he had a 1.55 ERA, a whip of 0.9, and 68 strikeouts and 52 in a third inning. So definitely, you know, he's not gonna be a stud. Like, it's not gonna be a, you know, top of the rotation type of guy, but definitely a guy that I think gets like 12, 15, 16, 17, something like that starts for Baltimore this year, maybe even more. You know, maybe if they don't go out and address their kind of, you know, lack of pitching. I mean, the 3-5 for them right now is not overly enticing. It's like Rodgers, Bradish, and then it's just you know, a bunch of question marks. So maybe with a you know, strong spring showing, you could see Gibson getting that rotation. And so maybe he gets 25, 30 starts this year. I definitely think he's up with Baltimore more than he's in AAA. So you definitely, you know, that's, you're getting him around, you know, around 40-ish, give or take a round or two either way. Yeah, I think that's a good, you know, upside flyer at that point in your draft.
Yep, that's the name I heard a few Baltimore like beat reporters slowly start mentioning once that G-Rod trade. I'm like, I went straight to the ADP. I'm like, okay, we can play that game. That's yep. That's intriguing at that point in time. Let's head to Tampa Bay. They got a new roof. What do we got when it comes to prospects? Because, again, it's the team that's always churning out prospects. Sometimes they have too many. They have to trade them or they go to the Rule 5 draft. But what are we looking at here with Tampa Bay this year?
Yeah, so they should have one right away. You know, and really the big one this year is Carson Williams. And he's a guy that is not really even getting drafted super early. It's around like pick four. What is he now, 440 or so right now. But he's a guy that I think could run with a starting gig just because he's the type of guy that is super valuable. He might fall into that better in real life than fantasy kind of bucket, but that's no slight to his offensive abilities whatsoever. But just the fact that he has such a good glove that, you know, he brings so much value to Tampa Bay and at a premium position. I mean, they got Taylor Walls as well. I don't really think Taylor Walls is going to hold back. You know, what do you have for an OPS this past year? 599. Yeah, Taylor Walls ain't holding anybody back, especially you know, a top prospect like Carson Williams, who did get a cup of coffee. So he's already had, you know, a little taste of the major leagues. And with him, you know, we talk about the full, you know, the five main tools in evaluating a player. He's above average or better in four of those. He's an above average power, above average speed guy. Now, I think he actually has three or four straight years in the minor leagues going 2020. And then he is a gold glove caliber defender with a strong arm. But unfortunately, the one that is maybe even lower than below average is the hit tool. I mean, he's K rate over 30%. You know, contact rates, you know, kind of in that low 60% range, which just isn't going to get it done. So right now, I don't know if he's more than a 220 hitter. So I'm kind of a little hesitant with him, though. I've had a chance to talk with Carson Williams. And he's a guy that, you know, he's a gamer. He eats, sleeps, and breathes baseball. Very smart, very, you know, good head on his shoulders, all those intangibles. So a guy that if anybody's going to figure it out, you know, that type of player in that type of system that does so well with player development. So I feel better with him being where he is than, you know, when then with the Angels, for instance, like a team we were just talking about. So we'll see if he figures this out. I mean, the ADP is not bad, you know, getting near around 30 there. So that's not terrible. So if he, especially if you draft a little bit later and it's looking like he's going to be the starting shortstop, I guess even if it's a lower average, 220, 230, I could see, you know, 15 to 20 bombs, 15 to 20 steals right away. You have to work around that low average, but he's a really good ball player. Just hopefully the average doesn't kill you.
Yeah, no, I was torn on him last year. Obviously, first time through wasn't ideal, but yes, he's better than Taylor Walls. I don't care if Taylor Walls' parents are listening. I apologize, but let's get the kid a shot there and see what we got. What else you got for us in Tampa?
You know, that's really, there's not a ton of other big names. I mean, Ian Seymour is pretty enticing, though I'm not fully sure if he's still prospect eligible. He might have graduated, but you know, Ian Seymour might have a chance to get that number five spot in the rotation. He did graduate. He went 57 innings, yeah. So now that's close enough. He's still a pretty fun arm, bunch of strikeouts. So he's another one to keep an eye on. But really, all their other prospects for Tampa Bay are, you know, more like 2027 ETA guys. Maybe you see an Xavier Isaac. Maybe you see a Trey Morgan. I'm just not super enticed by either of them for this year or long term. So, yeah, really it's Carson Williams and a little Ian Seymour for you at Tampa Bay.
Perfect. Let's wrap up the AL East with your American League champion, Toronto Blue Jays, who They're busy. They're one of the most busy teams on the hot stove right now. Do they have any prospects to come up and support this action, or is this why they're spending all their money?
Yeah, really outside of – I mean, there's two names. Two and a half names, I'll say. I'm looking at here with Toronto, and maybe you can call two of these three guys a half, but you know, obviously the big one who's still prospect eligible, Treya Savage, but he's on everyone's radar at this point after what he did, you know, in throughout the postseason, you know, big start after big start. You know, his ADP is already 127 right now. So he's going actually like there's three. That's actually kind of funny that three Toronto guys are all like basically back to back to back in ADP. You know, he's at 127, then right ahead of him, Gausman at 125, and Shane Bieber at like 124. So, but the upside is absolutely, you know, sky high with you, Savage. I think he had a K rate damn near 40% in the minor leagues last year. A little bit of a, you know, control issue here and there. I was at, I think, three of his starts in double A last year. And you saw the upside, that splitter, you know, everyone saw that in the postseason, in the World Series, that splitter is filthy. It's always been filthy. You know, he's got the good fastball, good breaking ball. Sometimes he gets, you know, a little too hittable. He lives in the zone with the fastball too much, gives up too many walks. So I've seen some of those, like, you know, 2 2/3, 3 earned run, 3 walk outings. But same time, like, this guy could, he could easily have 200 Ks this year. I mean, you see him get 150-ish innings. I could see him getting 200 Ks. Maybe the ERA and whip's a little higher, but for upside, like, who is it? Eno was talking about how it's like the hype 7, kind of in that 110 to 160 or whatever range. You go guys like McLean and MI and Chase Burns and all them, Mizorowski. You know, Savage is absolutely in there. So he's one where, hey, if I already have two starters I feel good about, like let's say you started with, like, I don't know, Christopher Sanchez and, I don't know, insert safe SP2 name, whatever you want to go with. If you had two guys, you're like, all right, I feel good about these two, then I'm fine kind of dipping into that hype range and getting a McLean or a Savage or Bubba Chandler or whoever. And yeah, Savage, he's definitely, you know, one of the best pitching prospects in the game and a guy that's going to be a really fun fantasy asset for a long time. And yeah, he'll be in that rotation. Even with all the guys they're adding, I'd be shocked if he wasn't, you know, in that rotation on opening day. But the other pitcher, kind of like one of the halves I was talking about, is Ricky Tiedemann, who was one of the top pitching prospects in the game at, you know, a few years ago. But and a guy that I drove 2 hours to see on multiple occasions because he was that good. And I think he still has that upside, but he's gotten to the point where, you know, with all these injuries, you just don't know what you're going to get out of him for volume. And, you know, how much is he going to pitch this year? Probably not a lot at the major league level, unless they have a few injuries. I mean, he's probably like eighth or so on that depth chart in terms of starting pitchers. So he's one just more so like keeping your mind. You maybe take a late round DC flyer. I mean, what's his ADP? Where is he? Oh, 620. So, yeah, you know, last 10 rounds, fine. Or once he comes up in, you know, in FAB and on leagues that, you know, aren't, you know, 50 round draft holds, you know, he's a fun upside flyer. I just have a hard time gauging how much of him we're going to see, both just because of the, you know, how blocked he is and just, you know, all the injuries that I mentioned.
Perfect. Tiedemann was the one I was figuring you're gonna throw out there because seems like we talked about him for 2 or 3 years in a row, but he just can't stay healthy. It's very, very
It's
frustrating.
Yep, 100%.
Anything else with Toronto, or do you want to move to the AL Central?
Yeah, that's basically it. You know, another name, you know, I was thinking about, but he hasn't even been drafted yet. Is Yohendrik Pinongo, kind of a fun outfielder with some power, but he's a guy that's probably, if you want to take a, you know, last 2 or 3 round flyer on him, maybe, but that's pretty much it with Toronto.
All right, it's end of the Central, and we'll start with the Cleveland Guardians, a team that doesn't spend money and relies on their minors from time to time, and they contend. So do they have anything to rely on this year, Eric? Or are they just going to hope and pray on, you know, the next David Fry to get healthy again?
you know there's going to be the next David Fry. I mean,
yes,
they always have those guys that just kind of come out of nowhere, and you're like, who the heck is this guy, and why is he hitting 340 over the last month? But yeah, kind of fitting that we just talked about Tiedemann, because now we have another guy who is probably equally as talented, but hitter instead of a pitcher, that just can't stay healthy. Guy that everyone that knows me knows I love this guy, still do. Chase DeLauder. I mean, he's been, when he's on the field, which I know has not been often, has just time and time again shown that he's the best guy on the field in most games. We saw him out in the Arizona Fall League. Just, you could tell he was too good, but they just wanted to get him some extra time because of the time he missed. He kind of gives me like Christian Yelich vibes, where it's like, the big bodied outfielder, but with good athleticism, can hit for power, can get on base, steal some bags, contact skills are there as well. He just hasn't put up the huge numbers because he's only been on the field for, 40, 50, 60 games a year. Cleveland, their outfield right now, there are some openings. It's not like, he's blocked right now, because that outfield right now is Stephen Kwan, who I've even heard trade rumors about Stephen Kwan. We'll see if that comes to fruition. But even outside of him, they have, George Valera. He ain't holding anybody back. I mean, Jonathan Rodriguez. I mean, as of now, just because of the lack of options, Roster Research actually has DeLauder as the starting center fielder. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. I would love to see it. I think they just need to stop wasting their bullets with him and just bring him up, just when he does play, it's going to be for Cleveland, hopefully. So he's a guy that I think just on a per game basis is going to be a really good guy. Just hopefully he can put all these, foot and leg issues behind him. I think it was like a hand issue. It's been a plethora of injuries for Chase DeLauder, but I still say on talent alone, he's a top 10 prospect. It's just, you can't rank him there right now because of all the time missed. He's, bottom 10 in terms of durability, which is obviously, a bit frustrating, especially for those of us, me, that have had him in dynasty leagues. But yeah, Chase DeLauder, I think if he can stay healthy, he's going to be a really, really good fantasy asset. And his ADP is right on 300. So you're kind of getting him, a few rounds later than he would Dylan Beavers, outfield five territory. I love that. If I can get like a Beavers or DeLauder type as my outfield five, that's where I kind of like taking those upside shots. I'm all for that.
Yep, I got a share already. I jumped on it when when they brought him up in the postseason, actually played him every game. That brought up that spoke volumes to me. It's just like you said, it's the health. Can he stay healthy? If he does, there's no reason he hasn't played pretty much all season, I think, with the Cleveland Guardians. So I'm with you there. But they got some more youth that could get a shot this year. So what else you got for us?
Yeah, my many rankings have this guy number one for Cleveland, at least, and that's Travis Bezzana, former number one overall pick a few years ago. He hasn't torn up the minor leagues like you'd expect, that put up the gaudy numbers, but this guy, he's a good contact guy, good approach. Like, I think he's a big guy that gives you a good average, good OBP, not like a huge power speed guy, but probably a guy that can give you like 15 to 20 home runs, can give you 20, 25 steals. Honestly, long-term, I think you could see Bezzana be pretty similar in like value to like a Luke Kuechel. Not a guy that's going to sock you a ton of home runs, but he'll give you some like double digits while giving you a good average, 25 plus steals. Just give you kind of like that nice, well-rounded profile. And just to show the OBP skills for him, he had a 389 OBP last year, while you only had 245, but the contact skills were not indicative of a 245 average. But, 9 home runs, 12 steals, 84 games, so it gives you a little bit of that power-speed blend. So, yeah, Bezzana, definitely a pretty fun one, going around like round 29, 30 in your 15 team league. So you got to get, you're not drafting starters at that point. You're probably drafting your second or third second baseman, or third or fourth middle infielder overall. So yeah, he's a guy where at that point, I think the upside kind of warrants a selection in that range. So yeah, you're not going to find much more upside at that point in your draft. So I'd be fine taking him there.
Yep, definitely. And not to mention that position helps a ton at that point in the draft. Yes. So get some Bizzano while you can. Anything else with the Cleveland Guardians?
I think that's, I mean,
are we done with Juan Brito?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
I think Juan Brito is just a kind of a kind of utility guy that kind of bounces around at this point. You know, I think we do this again next year. They're going to have a few guys that are going to be probably on the cusp of that point. But one other name I just want to throw out there because I love him and he's back healthy now. Daniel Espino.
I thought you were going to mention it first, but yeah. I was like, never mind. It's the Lauder's team. But that's who I thought you were going for.
I have to at least mention him. I mean, this was a guy that I had as a top five pitching prospect, and I don't think I was alone. But that was, I don't even know how many years ago that was, the 2019 or something. It might have even been pre-pandemic, which is just insane to think about. It's been so freaking long since he pitched. But so much upside. I mean, he's 24 now, almost 25, but this guy is just, and he came back in the AFL. He was rusty, but he came back and showed, like, all right, he's still got the mid to upper 90s heat. He's still got the two really good breaking balls, a changeup. The stuff is still really, really good. So just a name to just keep in your back of your mind, I'd say.
All right, then to the Detroit Tigers, a team that's been successful of late, and they have a heck of a farm system they're putting together, at least close to showcasing them to the big league world. Where do you sit on McGonagall and company?
Yeah, no, McGonagall, I mean, he's nicknamed the professor, obviously, because of the Harry Potter, but it really fits, too. It's the way he goes about hitting. Like, he's a very mature, advanced hitter. Like, you wouldn't think that this is a 21-year-old guy that was just drafted 2 years ago that, you know, hasn't gotten above double A yet. Guys, I saw him in double A and out in the Arizona Fall League. I hit home runs and both times I saw him. Just, you know, he is just so comfortable in the box. And I think people think about him as more of like a, you know, just, oh, he's a contact on base guy, but no, he's got some sneaky power too. I mean, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's like 5'9", 5'10". But he really packs a punch. The bat speed's there. He can really drive the ball. So maybe he's not the power speed guy that like a Connor Griffin is, who you might see later in the season as well. But he's maybe the best or in that discussion for best pure hitters in the minor leagues, and still a guy that can probably be like a 20-25 homer guy, maybe 20-25 steals, a guy that can really push 20-20 annually while giving you a high average and OBP. So I think this guy has, top 50 overall fantasy pick upside down the road, a guy that we're drafting, third, fourth round, maybe even higher than that. And as of now, I mean, there's talks about him breaking camp. If not, I think he's still up very, very early into the season. I mean, primarily shortstop, but he could probably move to second or third if needed. They did bring back Gleyber Torres this year, so that kind of clogs up one spot. But right now, the shortstop is Zach McKinstry, who we all know that's more of like a utility guy. So McKinstry's not going to hold back a McGonagall. So assuming they don't bring in anybody else, I could easily see McGonagall starting at shortstop on opening day. And if that does happen, that ADP, I mean, I bet you if you're drafting now, now's the time to get him.
Yes, 245 right now.
Yeah, ADP is 245. I bet you in March, take 100 picks off of that.
Yeah.
I bet you he's like in the top one, maybe even higher than that, especially if it's like trending towards him being the opening day shortstop. That might even be pushing top 100 at that point, just because the top two prospects in baseball, it's either you either go Griffin or you go McGonagall. It's like those two are kind of like in tier one by themselves. And then you get to like the Mades and the DeVries and all of them. But yeah, McGonagall, I mean, obviously we can never guarantee that any prospect is going to hit the ground running. I mean, that's why I have a TANG acronym. There, there are no guarantees with prospects. We've seen even the best prospects falter, cough, cough, Jared Kelnick, cough, cough. And so even McGonagall, he might fall on his face, but I do feel better than basically almost every other prospect that's come up in the last 5 years about him hitting the ground running and just hitting well and not falling on his face. So yeah, he's one, the big one to look out for this year.
Yeah, his plate skills impressed me a ton in Arizona compared to a lot of the other guys out there. He was taking just anything close. It was like Juan Soto up there. It felt like I was like, whoa, this kid's got something, which is great to see.
Yeah.
What else we got in Detroit? Because, again, there's a handful of guys. I just don't know if there's room for them just yet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, with Detroit kind of transitioning to more of a win now mode, yeah, they don't have as many open spots as they did maybe a few years ago. But you know, another hitter before I get over to a pitcher here that I think we might see, it'd be much later in the season. That's Max Clark, outfielder. I mean, he's a top 10, top 15 overall prospect in this game. A guy that I interviewed way back in the day. Back when I think it was right before he was drafted. So this was like 2023, I think he was drafted. Might be off by a year on that. But you know, this kid is an absolute gamer. Like you see, you follow him, he's on Twitter and Instagram. He's always posting videos in the cage. Like this guy is just baseball 24/7, 365, and plenty of tools to go along with it. So huge athlete, some good power, good contact skills. I just don't think we see him until more like second half of the year. But, you know, the pitcher that I'm kind of excited about, and he's still technically prospect eligible. And I got even more excited after talking. I had Paul Sporer on my podcast, and Sporer was raving about this guy. And
Tigers pitcher? No.
Yeah, I know. Sporer, never. But he talked about this guy out at FPAS on, I forget what panel or podcast it was at this point, but Troy Melton, who got some time with Detroit last year, you know, four starts, 12, you know, appearances out of the bullpen. ERA was under 3. WHIP was just a hair over 1. Didn't have, you know, big strikeout numbers, but had, you know, better K numbers in the minor leagues. Deep arsenal, 6 pitches, you know, four seamer up around 97 miles an hour. He can miss bats, you know, pretty solid. You know, command and control guy as well, doesn't give a ton of free passes. So, you know, big 6'4", 220, good frame. And I think he gets one of those last rotation spots for Detroit. And his ADP is, you know, around 270 right now. So talking around like 18, 19 as your SP7 or so. Yeah. But by that point, he's going right around a couple of his teammates, actually. Casey Mize right before him. Reese Olson, who I like a lot, actually, right after him. But yeah, he's a guy at that point as an SP7 or so. Yeah, I'd be fine taking the upside shot there.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard a lot of Melton conversations with Spore and others of late. A lot of being optimistic about what's coming up there, which don't mind that ADP at all. Let's go to Kansas City, where we saw Big Jack Cags get his chance last year. Fell on his face a bit, but you know, again, I think he figures it out sooner than later. We saw Carter Jensen get a cup of coffee. He's probably on your list right now. What do we got to look forward to in Kansas City?
Yeah, no, Carter Jensen is the big one here, and he's kind of going, you know, a little bit behind, I think, Basayo. Yep. In ADP by about, 20, 30 picks or whatever it was. I think Basayo was like 180-something, and Jensen's going around pick 216 right now. So he's one where I would love him as my C2, because he's one of those guys where you can get him as like the 18th, 19th, whatever catcher off the board, but could easily return like top 12 catcher value this year, because, you know, he just absolutely pounds the ball. And you saw that. You look at a Savant page, very small sample size, but he was also one of the top guys in terms of hard hit rate and barrel rate in AAA as well. Like his quality of contact was just a hair below Roman Anthony's. You know, Anthony's a better pure hitter, all this, now he steals bags. So obviously you're not going to, you know, put Jensen in the same category as Anthony, but just shows like this guy, when he makes contact, he drives it. And it's not like it's bad contact skills or anything like that, but you know, would it surprise me if Jensen, you know, hit like 260 and gave me like 20, 21, 22 home runs this year with a good OBP as well? Absolutely not. It will not surprise me in the slightest. So, you know, if I can get him as my C2 in a lot of leagues, I would love that. He's probably not on the radar in like single catcher formats, you know, outside of deeper ones, but you know, in two catcher leagues, like on NFBC, yeah, he's a guy that I'm going to be targeting very, very heavily, because I think he's a step right in. probably hit, fifth or sixth or something like that for them, and driving a good amount of runs too. So yeah, I like Carter Jensen a lot this year, and the ADP is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the ADP is great. I expect that to climb as we
probably.
Yep. I think the only thing like holding people back is they're probably sitting there going, well, if Salvi's healthy, where's Carter going to play? Well, if you look at the rest of the lineup, folks, they're going to find a place for Carter Jensen to swing the bat. And once people realize he's going to play a decent amount, that he'll be well worthy of a catcher too, I think. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. Anything else in Kansas City?
No, not really. Their system is pretty bad overall. They have a couple young arms, but they're still like 2-3 years away. But yeah, Jensen is the one that I'm pretty excited about. He's probably one of the more exciting names we'll talk about in this entire episode for me personally.
That's good to hear, because I am very excited about him as well. Let's go to the Minnesota Twins, another team maybe not as bad as Kansas City, but it seems like a lot of their guys are a little ways off is what I've been trying to say.
Well, there's two with with Minnesota. But I just don't know how much you're going to see of these guys this year, because they've had a lot of injuries. Like, Minnesota is not the greatest in terms of keeping their guys healthy. No. Obviously, you look at Buxton, Royce Lewis are two of the poster childs, and that unfortunately has extended into the minor leagues as well. But they probably have two of the best outfield prospects in the game right now in Walker Jenkins and Emmanuel Rodriguez. I think you see both of them at some point this year. I'm just not sure how much. I think Jenkins, even though he's younger and less experienced, I think he's actually kind of leapfrogged Rodriguez in terms of, ETA to the majors. Jenkins, I have as a back end top 10 overall prospect. And he's a guy that, contact skills are good, gets on base, always has got on base at a really high clip, draws a lot of walks. The raw power is there. He's still kind of filling out his frame. Good athlete as well. So he's kind of like everything you kind of look for like a fantasy, potential fantasy impact player. But he just can't stay on the field. Same with Rodriguez. Like, Rodriguez, huge power. You're talking like maybe a 30 homer guy if everything clicks. And a guy that can run a bit too. He's not thought of as a runner, but a guy that steals you some bags. But the contact skills have been kind of trending in the wrong way. He hasn't been on the field that much over the last year or two either. So, both those guys are pretty enticing. And Minnesota obviously kind of sold off a lot of pieces. So right now, I think there's plenty of opportunity for Jenkins or Rodriguez to get some time at some point this year. Obviously, Buxton's in the center. Does he get traded? I've seen his name kind of rumored, so maybe. And then in the corners, you have the super exciting duo of Matt Wallner and Austin Martin. So even if Buxton's not dealt, I think there's plenty of opportunity for Jenkins and or Rodriguez to get some time. I'd be much more excited about Jenkins. Like I said, I think he's a better pure hitter. I have less questions about him. I think it's more upside as well. And he did get a cup of coffee in AAA last year. And you look at ADP for those two. 446, okay. And then where's Ira? Rodriguez, they're actually closer than I thought. Rodriguez is like 90 or so picks after pick 535. So, round 30 to 35 or so. I'm not sure I'll get a lot of Rodriguez because I have those questions that I mentioned about him. But I like Jenkins a lot, so – in that range and that type of format, I think I'll be getting a few shares of him this year.
Yep. That's Jenkins is the name I've heard bandied around. If you talk Minnesota, especially if one more trade takes place, it just opens up the floodgates for these guys. So that one checks the boxes for sure. Let's head to the White Sox, who in the last couple of years, they made some trades and actually rebuilt their farm system pretty darn good. All things considered, we've seen a couple of them already. There's more to come. They might still trade Lou Bob, and this whole conversation adds on more to it. Where are you at with the White Sox versus potential impact this season?
Yeah, there's not a ton of guys that I think are going to be the really exciting names this year, but definitely a few names to really keep an eye on this year. Two pitchers, Hagen Smith, Noah Schultz, probably two of the best six or seven lefties in the minor leagues right now. You know, Smith, I've had my doubts with him just because he's got a really good fastball slider, you know, but maybe one of the better sliders in all of baseball, including the major leagues, to be honest with you. But just, I think the walk rate was like 17%. Just has a hard time throwing strike. We saw that out in Arizona as well. And then Noah Schultz just had some injuries last year, but he was considered by many to be like a top five or six pitching prospect entering last season. So I do think you see both Smith and Schultz at some point this year. I think you maybe see like a Brayden Montgomery, who's their top overall prospect in the second half of the season. So maybe he's like a late round, you know, last five round DC flyer there. And maybe even a guy that's, you know, probably the most sneaky name on this list, but Sam Antonacci, who we saw out in Arizona as well. Just a really good pure hitter. Like, this guy puts the bat on the ball, he gets on base, does not strike out much at all. You know, maybe only like a 10 to 15 homer guy, but can steal you some bags too. So, yeah, this White Sox team, though, they have brought up some guys. You know, there still are some openings, so I could see, you know, a few of these names kind of get a shot this year, especially those pitchers that I mentioned. So, those guys are going. Schultz is, like 637, and Smith is like 711. So these guys are like last round. Montgomery's in that range as well, 696. So a lot of guys that you won't have to spend more than like around 46, 47, 48 pick or so. So that point, the upside on all three of those names, especially Montgomery, Smith, and Schultz, I think at that point, you know, what do you have to lose?
Agreed. It's lightning in a bottle season. And just to use your acronym again, TANG, which I love because it makes so much sense with prospects, just in fantasy in general. But in prospects, is Noah Schultz was getting pushed up draft boards last season. People were like, he's so close because, like you say, he's a top 5-6 fantasy prospect. Like, people are, for good reasons, excited. So I just want to bring that up to the listeners. Like, yes, Eric is naming a lot of names here. Some of them might pan out, but just realize this is all about taking chances late, because even if these guys are great, injuries happen. Young kids are still young kids. Like, development is not linear, as they say. Like, there's so many levels to it, but it'd be cool to see Schultz make that impact now, especially after the hype last year, and now people are letting them fall down draft boards.
Yep, absolutely.
But let's go to the AL West here. We'll start with the Houston Astros, a team that a few years back was one of the best farm systems. They've made trades for good reasons. So it's maybe not as prolific at this point in time, but there's still some names, like some decent names. I don't know how many will have an impact this year, but where are you at with the Houston Astros potentially making a run with some prospects this year?
Yeah, there's a couple names here that have lost a little bit of their prospect shine just because they're a bit older. Like, they're two of their top hitting prospects are Jacob Melton, outfielder, and Bryce Matthews, second baseman. You know, both, like, Matthews is almost 24. Melton just turned 25. So that's like 50 in terms of being a prospect these days. But, you know, and both got, you know, a cup of coffee with Houston. Neither did much with it. But, you know, I have Melton as like a back end top 100 prospect. I have Matthews just outside of my top 100. So I still think there's some upside there, but I just don't know when you see these guys. I think there's an easier path for Melton because it looks like they might be moving Altuve back to second base permanently, which probably is the best call for him. So outfield right now, obviously you've got Yordan and left. You got, when does he get hurt? Unfortunately, Jesus Sanchez and right. But then I think the easiest path for him would be center field. They get Zach Cole in center field, who's, you know, good power, a little bit of speed, but I think his K rate was like 7,000% or something like that last year.
It was close to 40. So you're not far off, actually.
And it was high in the minors too. It wasn't like that. It was just like, oh, it was just a small cup of coffee thing. No, like, it was, you know, he's been, you know, pretty high K rate guy for a bit now. So yeah, I guess see Melton taking that spot. You know, Melton's a decent defender as well, you know, power speed guy. So he's definitely one where if I'm going to get any young Houston guy this year, it's probably going to be Jacob Melton as a late round flyer. And that's also 626,
ADP 626, man, cheap as heck.
Yeah, that's, you know, round 42, 43, something like that. Yeah, I love that ADP, honestly. And then Bryce Matthews is going around 500. But again, I see a harder path for him, though he can play a few infield spots. So I'm sure he'll get his spot, you know, his chance at some point, whether it be second, third, short, whatever. But yeah, I think Jacob Melton is the Houston youngster I'm going to have the most shares of this year for sure.
Yeah, I like him. I wrote him up a lot last year for AOPT tomorrow because I'm always like looking at their farm system, and I think he's a lot better than what we saw. Didn't really get a fair shake, it feels like, but that happens when you have a contending team and they want your veterans to play. But yeah, I like him quite a bit. And on the pitching side, it seems like we've seen them all. And I don't know if it's any, like, you know, there's Blue Ball and company. I don't know if it's too exciting, but what do you got on those guys, if anything?
Yeah, no, not a ton of excitement there. I mean, maybe you see, you know, Ethan Pecco might get a chance. He might be worth the late round flyer. You know, maybe. I mean, that's really it, actually. You know, a lot of these. I'm not a big Blue Ball guy. I'm just not. He's fine. So it, you know, late round flyer, fine. I'm not opposed to that. But yeah, not really a ton of excitement on the pitching side right now. There's a couple, you know, guys that are maybe a little bit more exciting in the lower levels for them, but in terms of guys for 2026, yeah, it's maybe Pecco, maybe Blue Bob, but only is like, you know, around 49-50 guys.
Perfect. Let's go to the Seattle Mariners. They had a nice little playoff run until Toronto knocked them off, but a team that I think they need to play Harry Ford, but what do you got on Seattle?
Yeah, unfortunately, Harry Ford plays the same position as that that Cal Raleigh fella. Exactly. So
they need to trade Harry Ford. What they need to do, because
I think that'd be, you know, Harry Ford, like the two guys that come to mind, especially at catcher, Harry Ford and Dalton Rushing with the Dodgers. Like, just trade them.
Yes,
they're very talented. I just want to see what they can do with like a you know, regular gig, but it doesn't look like they're gonna get when they're behind Will Smith and Cal Raleigh. It's kind of hard to get playing time there, but. Harry Ford, if given the chance, I think would be intriguing. He's going to pick 500, so not a ton of risk at that point in your draft. But this Seattle system is loaded. I mean, I think Seattle overall, when you include like major league talent and minor league talent, might be one of the top combinations in all of baseball, because they have eight guys in my top 100 overall, including Harry Ford right now. Yeah, I think the player for them, or the prospect, I should say, who makes the biggest impact this year is going to be Cole Emerson, who by and large is considered, I think, like top 15 to 25 in most rankings. A guy that's, you know, shortstop, but can play some second base as well. And right now that middle infield is kind of the weak spot. Really the entire infield outside of Josh Naylor.
Yeah.
Because you look at the second, third, short right now is projected to be Cole Young, not exciting. Ben Williamson, even less exciting. And then, you know, JP Crawford, he was not exciting, but he's a, you know, a fine.
It's a real life player that's not bad. But yes, fantasy, yeah, has nothing at all.
He's a fine veteran and could probably hold down the spot a little bit. But yeah, you could easily see Emerson kind of slot over it. I think the second base for Cole Young would be the most likely path. And maybe even on opening day, because he got up to AAA for a bit the last like month or so of last season. You know, one of those guys that he's almost like a McGonagall light in a way, where it's hits first with some power and speed, but it doesn't blow you away. Like, I think you can see Emerson be like a, you know, a 15 to 18 homer, 15 to 18 steal guy, but he's going to probably hit you 275, 280, good OBP as well. So maybe more of like those like high floor guy that doesn't wow you in any one area, but, you know, end of the year you're like, you know, hey, you know, Emerson had a pretty good year. I think he's kind of one of those guys that just always kind of sneaks up on people and gives you, you know, some good seasons. So yeah, I could easily see him taking that second base spot even right out of camp and running with it, and maybe even being one of the top guys for AL Rookie of the Year this year. And ADP very reasonable right now, around 457, so right around, you know, around 31. So I like him a lot. And
it's really, you know, good.
Maybe you even see, you know, even though he just got drafted, Cade Anderson might get up this year, who's, you know, maybe the best, probably the best pitcher taken in the 2025 draft, a guy that should fly through the minor leagues. He's been taken in 9 out of 11 DCs since the 1st of November, ADP right around 681. So another name, yeah, I'll take him late round flyer. And Lazaro Montes could get up this year too. Yeah. He's kind of similar to like Spencer Jones, where it's like big power but some contact issues, though his contact issues aren't quite as pronounced as Jones's are. But, you know, he's like a guy last round or two, plenty of upside, especially in that power department. So, yeah, Anderson and Montes, guys to look at last few rounds. But, yeah, Emerson, round 30, 31, 32, I like that a lot.
No, I love it. That is definitely a name I've noticed last season watching him come through the system. Him and Montes were two guys I just kind of kept an eye on that I was like, okay, the future's getting really bright for Seattle here when those two guys, like the power of Montes, if he can figure out the consistency. And Emerson, just like to your point, I'm not a prospect guy, but I could even pay attention. Okay, he looks pretty good. Like he's going to be a good ball player. So if I can figure it out, that means he's going to be really good probably. All right, let's go to Texas. Man, I'm going to try not to be rude here because maybe I missed something, but having to write about these guys every Monday morning, like for players that were close at the time last year, they didn't have many. Tell me if anything has changed. Well, I know one name you're going to mention, but tell me who we should look for in Texas outside of maybe one shortstop.
Yeah, and even that guy, I'm not sure you see him for more than like a late season cup of coffee this year.
Which makes sense to me too. Yeah.
Yeah. About right. For those that haven't figured out, we're talking about Sebastian Walcott, who is, you know, he is a tool shed and a half. I mean, he hasn't put up the gaudy numbers like Connor Griffin or anything like that quite yet, but you know, he's a guy that he played all of last year at Double A, not just got to Double A. The entire year at Double A as a 19-year-old. I think he turned 19 in like, I think it was February or March, so right before the season started. So, yeah, very young for the level that which has to be kind of factored in. So even though he didn't, you know, blow your socks off with numbers, this is still an extremely talented shortstop. I just don't think you see a big impact from him this year. And honestly, from Texas, I don't think there's really any excitement, and unless Walcott gets caught up earlier than I think. I mean, they have a decent, you know, young crop of prospects, you know, guys that might be good in a year or two that we could be talking about in this episode. But you know, their best pitching prospect that's close is Alejandro Rosario, but he's at Tommy John, so he's probably, I think, out for most, if not all, of the upcoming year. And really, all the other guys are just not that exciting. So yeah, not really a whole lot here from Texas unless Walker gets called up early. And he absolutely could. If he tears up AAA, I could see him getting the call early, especially if, you know, it's June, he's tearing it up, Seager's hurt again. I could see it. But I do think, you know, odds are more so like an August-September call-up for him.
Yep, totally agree. Like, it's a rough system. That would be the one name that stood out to me if – anything. Like, it's a rough system for the current season is what I should say.
Yes. Yep. Agreed.
Similarly, the Angels have that same vibe to me. Again, I could be wrong. I'm not a prospect guy, but when I look at their system, there's a couple guys I could see get some love. Like, I was kind of optimistic on a Lugo to get late pop last year. Didn't really pan out fully. I liked Kyren Paris. Maybe we should still believe in that. Who knows? Where are you at here on Anaheim? Because it's another team that they're taking the cheap pitchers like we talked about. They're trying to rebuild via trades, but it's tough the way they finally got AC in their gym, so that's a start.
I know, right? That's a step in the right direction, I guess. But yeah, this is one of the worst systems in baseball. I mean, thankfully Martin had the joy of talking up the Padres system because they trade everybody and anybody out of that system.
I think he literally said, like, there's nobody here. He had some quote that it was basically, yeah, there's nothing available right now.
And anybody of note will probably be traded away anyway before they even get to the majors. So with the Angels, the one name I'm kind of excited, or maybe two names, Caden Dana and Ryan Johnson. Both have been taken in just a couple DCs. So these are guys you probably can get super late. I mean, Dana's 691, taken in 7 out of 11 DCs. Johnson's been taken in one DC at pick 741, so last round of one DC out of 11. So these are guys that, you know, have some upside on the mound. And, you know, when this rotation inevitably falls apart, I mean, you know, who's expecting a rotation of Kikuchi, Soriano, Detmers, Rodriguez, and Alek Manoah to make it through a season? So, yeah, I think you'll get some opportunities for other pitchers to get a chance here. And I think, you know, late round flyer for Dana or Johnson, yeah, you could do worse.
Dana is a guy that I've kind of had a soft spot for in recent seasons. Like, the skills look good, but the health has not been there. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, there's a window where that could pan out. Let's wrap it up with the Sacramento Athletics, who, yeah, you can tell me. I don't know if DeVries is going to be ready this year or not, but it's always a young team is the way I'll say it. So what do we got in Sacramento?
Yeah, you know, it's DeVries is kind of, I think, similar ETA to like a Walcott.
That's fair.
Right? I feel like, yeah, you could see him this year. I mean, he's been pushed so far and kind of always, you know, done well with the aggressive assignment. So you could easily see that continue. But yeah, odds are, if I was a betting man, I'd say, you know, I'd take the under on like 200 plate appearances for him in the major leagues this year. But again, if he does get up early, he's a guy. I mean, I have him as a, you know, I think he's my sixth or seventh overall prospect right now. So definitely a lot of upside there. You know, with the Athletics, there's not anybody that's going to be up super early, but definitely some names to keep an eye on, like Jamie Arnold, who they just drafted. You know, similarly to Kate Anderson, could be a guy. You know, he's an advanced college arm. You know, pitched, you know, for Florida State, had faced really good competition there. So a guy that I think is going to be in the minor leagues for a very short amount of time. So you might see a Jamie Arnold later this year. Maybe a Gage Jump later this year, who really, you know, for lack of a better term, jumped up rankings last year. One of the better left-handed pitcher prospects in the game at this point. I think you see Gage Jump in the second half of the season. And Colby Thomas is still prospect eligible as well. You know, I kind of wonder where he fits into the outfield picture, because he's a guy that he racks up the extra base hits. I mean, I think he actually led the minor leagues in extra base hits in 2024. And I think he was still pretty high up there in 2025 as well. Yep, he was. Probably more of a lower average guy, and like maybe like a 240-ish type of guy. But he's got the power to hit you 20-plus home runs, give you double-digit steals as well. So maybe, you know, 20-plus, 10-plus if everything breaks right. But, you know, right now, outfield, you know, Soderstrom's out there, Butler's out there. Clark, who's kind of a hot mess at the plate but provides a lot of defensive value, is out there. So maybe as of now, it looks like Thomas is more of the fourth outfielder entering the year, but we'll see. You know, Butler had his issues last year. Maybe Clark just doesn't hit enough to make up for, you know, to keep his glove on the field. So I think you can see Thomas in there. So he's a guy that I would probably take a flyer on, because I think his ADP is actually pretty reasonable.
518.
Yeah. So after pick 500, I'm totally fine with it. I'd rather take him at 518 than Clark at 412. I'll say that. But then you look at your Gage Jump at 684, Jamie Arnold 741. So yeah, late round flyers for pitchers. You know, I'd rather go with Jump. I think he's up sooner. I think he's just as good as Arnold. So I think he'll be a guy that has a potentially bigger impact for this year for them.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, I like Colby Thomas. I like that power he brings. Just needs the playing time, to your point. All right, that's all 15 American League teams. A lot more to talk about on the East Coast / part of the Central, and then in Seattle. The rest of the league, it's pretty depleted in certain spots. Before we wrap up, I got two more questions for you, like I ask you every year. Let's narrow it down now. Who are your top three AL prospects that should have an impact in 2025?
So I'm going with McGonagall, because I do think he's up early enough that if it's an opening day, it's shortly thereafter, April or May. So I got to go McGonagall for one. I think Trey Savage is in that top three as well, just because of that strikeout potential. Should be in that rotation the entire year. So you don't have to worry about, oh, when will he be up? So I think he's definitely one. The third one, I honestly could go a few different ways, but I think I'm going to go right back to my boy Dylan Beavers. I am fully drinking the Dylan Beavers Kool-Aid both this year and long-term. I think he's going to keep exceeding expectations, keep being better than people think he is. And like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Beavers went 2020 this year and was, you know, AL Rookie of the Year finalist. I am that high on him. I have him as a top 20 overall prospect, which I don't think many others do. So I'm probably the high man on Beavers, but I'm telling you, he's going to keep turning some heads this year, but I put up a pretty good all-around stat line.
Love it, love it. The other question I have for you, for those Dynasty folks, and again, obviously, if you like Dynasty, you're hopefully listening to the Toolshed podcast and subscribe to the Patreon to get all the nuggets there. But for just a little bit on this show, who are some names that we maybe didn't go deep into tonight that we should keep an eye on our Dynasty radars?
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of fun names here. I mean, a couple of that, I mean, we mentioned, you know, DeVries in passing. We mentioned Walcott. We mentioned, like, Max Clark. Those guys, obviously, you know, for 2027, which is, that's weird to say, 2027 would be super exciting. I'm still getting used to saying 2026, and I guess 2027 for the following year. That's weird. But, you know, outside of them, since we already kind of said their names, at least, you know, some other names that, you know, Josue Briseño with Detroit Tigers. He's played some catcher, some first base. I think he's just as good as Sammy Basayo, and I don't think that's a common thought right now in terms of prospects. So I like Briseño a lot. So I think he's going to be – I still don't know if he's catcher or first base long term. I lean first base. You know, they had Dylan Dingler there in Detroit, who's pretty damn good. So yeah, I like Briseño a lot. I think he'll be maybe a cup of coffee later this year, but long term – I think he's really exciting. And, you know, I'll give you another Detroit name here, one that's more a year or two after that, more like a 2028 ETA. But Bryce Rainer, I hate making player comps on young prospects, but he gives me some, like, Corey Seager vibes. I don't think he's quite the pure hitter. Seager was at the same age, but, like, this that big-bodied, strong shortstop who doesn't really run a lot, though Rainer does run a little bit more than Seager ever did, but he hits the ball really hard. You're talking about a guy that had a hard hit rate above 50% in low A as a 19-year-old. Like, that is really, really elite. So, yeah, he's another guy I like a lot long-term. And, you know, another one that I just want to give some love to, another Minnesota guy that I found myself liking a lot more over the last year, and that's Kalen Culpepper, shortstop prospect. So who knows how that whole left side of the infield shakes out, but, you know, he's a solid defender. You know, he's, you know, 15 to 20 homer guy, not like a lot of power, but average power guy, above average speed, good contact, good approach, kind of like almost like a infield version of Dylan Beavers in a way where nothing wows you, but just like the sum of all the parts put together. Is a really good ball player that I think gets a little bit underrated for where he should be in prospect ranking. So yeah, those are a few names that I'm excited about for maybe for the next year after that.
Nice. Another Culpepper in Minnesota. Now we're talking.
There you go.
All right. Well, man, I appreciate it. Ran through a ton of names there. A lot of good stuff. I went back and looked at last year's little notes I took, and man, a lot of these guys had a cup of coffee to slash an impact at some point in the season. That's all we're looking for with these late picks and seeing if we can find something from there. So before we head on out, once again, remind everybody where they can find your awesome work for some reason they aren't aware.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I always look forward to doing this, and it's always a fun time every year. And yeah, we blew right through these names. Like, mm-hmm. Could probably go another hour with all the names we could talk about. But yeah, you follow me on Twitter at @EricCrossMLB. You know, I always post all my content there from RotoBaller, my Patreon, which I'm still cranking out a ton of stuff. RotoBaller is usually, you know, probably two articles a week on average. And yeah, still doing the Toolshed podcast. So just trying to stay busy and do cover the sport that we all love, right?
Yes, indeed. And you are staying busy. So everybody check him out. Again, if you're not, make sure you do it. But we'll be chatting with Eric as maybe in a month or so. We'll see. And if not, you guys go check him out and see what he's got going on. But until next time, This was your 2026 AL prospects for your Draft Champions Leagues. Bench with Bubba, episode 795. Catch y'all later.